Come be a part of Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics with your host, Dr. Ed Holliday. Hear the voices of liberty speaking all across America. Doc Holliday provides thought-provoking interviews and commentary about the issues and actions that are afflicting this country and what we need to do to get America back on track. Get fired up. Get inspired. Get on board with Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics right now.
And here we go.
That's the sound of rock cracking again right here in June, and you've got Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. I'm your host, Ed Holliday. You're listening to us right here on webtalkradio.net. That's webtalkradio.net this week. We're talking about the health care bill, and we're also talking presidential politics, and we're talking about what kind of leadership has our American president, President Barack Obama, shown in some of these fields. About health care, we're going to talk about what the Supreme Court is going to have a ruling this month about four or five words in the health care bill that could, the law now, that could actually deep six this law. And President Obama had something to say about that. So we'll play a clip, and I'll have to give some commentary during the clip. I just cannot give President Obama 60 seconds unfeathered access to your ears without interrupting him, because he's so, I think he's living in his own world. He doesn't know what the reality is. So we're going to help show him what it is and what the people are saying about the health care law that he passed. And I hope the Supreme Court will rule by what the law says and not what hopes and dreams are. I mean, hope and change, we found out, did not happen after 2008. Hope's gone, change has come, and we're praying for a kingdom come. Please help us. What we're going to do on presidential politics today is we're going to be talking, we got a clip from Scott Walker, had something to say. We're talking about a new entry into the presidential fray. Last week I did a show, and just as soon as I did a show, someone else jumped in the pool for the Republican nomination. So I'm going to have some things to say about that. So get ready for this week's great, great show, because everybody's saying, what would the Republicans do? What can the Republicans do if the Supreme Court strikes down a law? You got some pundits saying it's the worst thing could happen because the Republicans have no plan. I tell you what, Doc Holliday has a plan. I gave it to you over a year ago, but somebody said, hey, it's too complex. You know, it's not 2,800 pages. But I've got it condensed down to postcard size, what can replace Obamacare. We're going to talk about it right here. You know, I don't like the word Obamacare, because Obama doesn't care when he put this thing into place. And it's really the unaffordable, uncaring act. And that's the law of the land now. But Doc Holliday's alternative, it can be put on a postcard, basically. And I'm going to tell you about that. I've simplified it, and we're going to talk about that in today's show. You need to tell your congressman, tell him there's a way out. There's a play. There's something that can replace Obamacare and the Affordable and Caring Act immediately, as soon as the Supreme Court strikes down the part that is basically helping it to survive. So, great show planned here, and we will get into presidential politics. We just have to. There's so much to talk about. Before I do that, let me just say this. Just a few days ago, we had June 6th, and I asked my children. I have four children. I asked them, what does June 6th mean to you? What date rings in history? June the 6th. And my children could answer, June the 6th, 1944, D-Day, Invasion Day. And they told me the importance in American history. What about your children? Do they know what June the 6th means for freedom around the world? Do they know the sacrifices made? And in the past, we've had on this show a tribute to those who went and some that never came back. And I've told you the stories, and some of you are new listeners, and I won't go back and tell the whole story, but I know my dad is 87 years old now. He was right at the end of World War II and did not serve then. He served in the military between World War II and the Korean War, but my dad had 12 brothers, basically. And of those 12, 10 of them during World War II and in between in the Korean War, 10 of them served in the military. 7 at one time were overseas during World War II, some in the Pacific, some in the European Theater War. And one of my uncles who served is soon will be 90 years old, and he was over in Europe and in the mortars and served our country well. But my dad, I told you about, had friends before the war, World War II, he had a friend that had old Model A, and he'd take them into the town to see a picture show, and they'd help gather some gas so they could go watch a picture show. And he got drafted in the military, served, went in on June the 6th, 1944, and he didn't come back home. He gave his life. A young man, a couple years older than my dad. We know so many stories, and I told you a story of a friend of mine, my dad's, not my dad's age, he's younger, but he never knew his dad because his mother was pregnant with this baby, and his father died on the beaches of Normandy on June the 6th, 1944. And I've told you about how I had a cousin, my father's first cousin, went in a couple of days afterwards, and he said that the body bag, they had the tents there, and they knew what was in those tents, the body bags. You could smell death. He told me how he walked through there, and he said he knew it was one of those events in world history. He said the magnitude of the armada of the ships coming in and out, and just the amount of equipment and what was being unloaded onto the European continent. And he just said it. He said he could close his eyes and still take it in and still pinch himself. Said, was I really there? And in fact, he reached down and had a little container and put sand in it from the beaches where he came on shore. And this was after the fight, and he didn't come in fighting. He was about the second day. But he put sand, and he kept that because he said he wanted to always be able to touch and feel. He said the smell of death was all around. He could still smell the smoked and the cooked flesh of the flamethrowers that they went into the German machine gun nest. And he said there was just the smell of death and the oil and the gasoline mix of all the trucks and everything moving in and out. And he said massive amount of equipment just being rolled off of tanks. And he said it was just more than the eye could ever imagine, and just from one end of the coast to the other, as far as the eye could see, and planes going overhead, coming back and going and coming. And the invasion was something that was a feat that has been written about. There's been movies made about it, and most of you have seen those movies, and nothing could get your cousin who's telling me to be in there. I wish there's a way to describe the way he put the smells and in the as he told the story, and just could not believe he was there and being a part of that history. And so June the 6th, 1944. Don't let it slip from the American memory. You go to young people, and I'm ashamed to say a lot of them say, what happened? What do you remember June 6th for in American history? And so many of them don't have a clue. Don't let that happen to your children. Don't leave it up to the schools to teach them. You're not going to learn it in the schools. You've got to teach them at home. It's a sad fact, but you got to teach your children at home what June the 6th means in American history, lest we forget. God bless them. God bless each and every one who gave their lives June 6, 1944, and those who gave their bodies and sacrificed everything. So we're going to move on to the show, but I had to tell you, June the 6th, I had to take that time. That's a lot of time, but they deserve it, every one of them, who put their lives on the line and those who never came back, so that we have freedom today and the world can have hope for freedom. There's so many places that need freedom, and America has given that hope in the past, and it's time to take their leadership back. And that's why we're going to be talking about presidential politics here soon. But let's listen to what our commander-in-chief had to say about health care. And I got to tell you, we have got a plan, and I'm going to let you know it as soon as we hear our president talk about what he thinks about the Supreme Court and talking about a ruling that could be coming up very shortly about a piece of the health care law that he put together. And let's just hear what he had to say.
State legislatures to expand Medicaid, which was a central part of the architecture of the overall plan. We have to continue to improve the quality of care, and we know we can still bring down costs. And none of this is going to be easy. Nobody suggests that somehow our health care system is perfect as a consequence of the law being passed, but it is serving so many more people so much better.
Okay, Mr. President, I got to stop you right there. Serving so many people so much better. It is, on paper, serving more people. Is it doing a better job? Listen to the doctors. Listen to the nurses. Listen to those in the healthcare profession or what they think about the law. It's not working. And the people who get it, the few that it is helping, why did we have to change the whole system to help a few? We could actually give them healthcare plans, and we'd be a whole lot better off instead of subjecting a sixth of our economy into the hands of the federal government. And talk about costs coming down. Yes, I still want my $2,000 deduction in the premium you promised when this law went in effect. Mine's going up over $6,000 a year. Over $6,000 a year. It's gone up from what it was. So, yes, Mr. President, I just got to stop you right there. You cannot continue believing in the lies that somebody's been feeding you. Okay, we're going to let you talk again.
And we're not going to go backwards. There's something, I have to say, just deeply cynical about the ceaseless, endless, partisan attempts to roll back progress.
I cannot let the president get away with that. The ceaseless partisan talk about rolling back progress. I'm telling you, President Obama, it was never bipartisan. You forced a partisan issue. Remember, I'll let you keep every word out of 2,800 pages. Keep every word of your law that the Republicans were allowed to put in there. Keep it. Let the Republicans have a word to say about your law. You didn't let them have a single word in 2,800 pages. Shame on you for forcing this on everybody. And now what we're talking about at the Supreme Court is a line of one sentence, a few words, and we've talked about it before on the show. But if this law is struck down by the Supreme Court, everybody in America, listen to this. It's not because of a mean Supreme Court. It's not because of some partisan hacks on the Republican side. It's because some juvenile brains in the Democratic Party wrote the law. Nancy Pelosi, as Speaker of the House, said we must pass the bill to see what's in it. But what was in it was a failed bill, a failed sentence. If you make the mistake, don't blame it on the Supreme Court. You signed it in the law, Mr. President. You signed the words in the law, and it's written as it is. The Supreme Court should strike those words down. But not strike them down, just say they mean what they say they mean. And if they don't mean that, it's the Democrats' fault. Go back and take some English courses and learn how to write a law. Mr. President, don't blame anybody but your own party for sloppy law writing. Send them back to English courses in the colleges that you run. The liberals run the colleges, and if they can't write a law, then it's your fault. It's the fault of the Democrats. Don't blame anybody else. Do not blame anybody and say they're going to lose their insurance because of the Supreme Court. They'll lose it because of stupid Democrats who don't know the English language and don't know how to write a law. Blame it on the law writers. Do not break the law because somebody was not smart enough to write it in the way that you meant to be written. But I will say this. Do what the Supreme Court should do, should say these words mean what they say, and if you don't like it, send it back to Congress and get it rewritten. America does progress. We progress because we got rid of the Democratic majority in the House in 2010. We got rid of the Democratic majority in the Senate in 2014. America is progressing. And when we get rid of the Democrats out of the White House, Mr. President, and put a Republican in there in 2016, we will make progress. And this health care law should be put into hash heap history. Sweep it away. And let the Supreme Court start soon. And I got an answer for it. We're going to let you have a finishing word right here, Mr. President. And then I will give it an answer to what we need for health care in America.
I mean, I understood folks being skeptical or worried before the law passed, and there wasn't a reality there to examine. But once you see millions of people having health care, once you see that all the bad things that were predicted didn't happen, you'd think that it'd be time to move on. Let's figure out how to make it better. Why, it seems so cynical to want to take coverage away from millions of people, to take care away from the people who need it the most, to punish millions with higher costs of care, and unravel what's now been woven into the fabric of America.
Mr. President, what's been woven into the fabric of America is freedom. When we don't like laws that are forced on us, the American people can get rid of the people who forced it on us. Like I said previously, 2010, the Democrats were kicked out of the leadership of the House of Representatives. Took a little longer, but 2014, the Democrats were kicked out of the United States Senate. And in 2016, praise the Lord, if the people will gather together and say it's time to kick the Democrats out of the White House. It's time, ladies and gentlemen, that we let this president know progress means getting the socialists out of the way and putting some capitalists to understand free markets into positions of authority and power, that we can actually get rid of this poorly written, bad for America health care law. Now, I said I would tell you how we can put it on a postcard and we can repeal Obamacare and replace it with Doc Holliday's postcard plan. It's coming to you right after you listen to this.
Hello, America. Todd Starnes here from the Fox News corner of the world, and you are listening to Rock Splitting Politics. Sweet mercy.
Woo! All right.
That's good.
And you are listening to Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. Let me take this moment to remind you that you're listening to us right here on webtalkradio.net. That's webtalkradio.net. Glad to have each and every one of you listening. I'm proud of our new listeners. Some of you picked up and started listening to us when I was running for Congress. We're glad to keep your attention, and we're glad you're listening to us because we are digging into politics, and especially with the presidential election coming up 2016. You don't want to miss any week of Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. And I want to remind you, you can go to our Facebook page, Rock Splitting Politics. You can like us there, and we'll put up some stories during the week. We can't necessarily get everything on the show every week. But I also want to remind you to check that out, and you check out my webpage, docholiday.org, docholiday.org. We're getting that back up after our campaign. So It's we're getting campaign sites and stuff down and getting back up on docholiday.org. Check out the page. We'll have some things there, including this health care law I'll be talking about in a couple minutes. But I also want to remind you that we have friends across the country listening to Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics, and we have international friends. I want to, again, remind my international friends, thank you for taking the time to listen to us around the globe. And we do promote liberty and freedom. And just like I told you a few minutes ago, about June the 6th, 1944, a day no one should forget that loves freedom. And that's what we highlight, freedom, and what it takes to bring freedom and good ideas to America. We're going to keep working on it, and we will keep pushing America toward more freedom and more liberty. Thank you for listening to us. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, send the links out to them. And now I want to tell you what we are going to do as far as, can we put on a postcard what can replace the Unaffordable and Uncaring Act, better known as Obamacare. And this is how we do it. Number one, it's just as easy as 1, 2, 3. Some of these you've heard me talk about, but I've condensed them into just three things you need to know. Number one, we, of course, after we repeal the entire Unaffordable and Uncaring Act, repeal every word of it, get it out of America. It's not good for America. It is a poison that gets worse and worse each year. So we repeal it, and then what do? It's very simple. 1, 2, 3. First, everybody gets health savings accounts. We get health savings accounts to help us pay premiums. Right now, you can't pay an insurance premium through a health savings account. They limit to what work is done. But we open up the health savings accounts. We allow states to sell insurance across state lines. We allow people to look across the country to find the best health care plan for them and their family that meets their needs. We don't load down the plans with so much that you got to cover, that everybody gets a plan, has got to cover maternity. Everybody has to cover different things that it may not be, your family needs that. You don't want 65-year-olds having to pay for maternity care. And these are the things, the policies that you can get by just free market. Open up the free market. Use health savings accounts and allow employers, if they can't buy or don't have health care plans for their employees, they can put so much money in health savings accounts. Let others put money in health savings accounts. That's protected, tax-free, and it can grow until it's needed. But those are things that you can see at Heritage Family, their plans and other plans. Let the free market economy work in the healthcare field. Now, what do you do with those who can't afford a whole policy? Well, we're going to get into that on number three. But on number two, it's what I call Doc Bucks, D-O-C, Bucks, Doc Bucks. You allow doctors and those health care providers who provide care, they can, for those who are having full-time jobs, they will get a health care plan. It may be a high deductible. And if somebody has high deductibles, which keeps the cost down, you can let the deductible part building up to it can use Doc Bucks. That's where doctors can accept from the people needing care until they meet the deductible on high deductible insurance plans. They can use Doc Bucks. It's, you can use it like Apple Pay systems. There's different things out there, the newer technologies. But we would allow doctors to deduct from the IRS what they owe the IRS. This keeps doctors from, like you hear people, Medicare scams or Medicaid scams. This keeps doctors from trying to scam. They can't make money off this, but they can reduce their tax bill, and therefore they have to have more money coming in. They can't just take money out if it don't make an income. So it keeps a check in the those who might try to abuse the system. But that's Doc Bucks. I said 1, 2, 3. Now what's 3? 3, you go to the private sector, and this is where you keep the government out of it, and all the government bureaucracy and all the government lawyers and spenders and everything that makes things go up, up, up with cost. Get the government out of it. Number 3, go to the private industry and just say this simple law. For every 2 policies of health insurance you sell, you must provide a 3rd one free to someone who has a full-time job in America. How do you disperse it? You use the internet. Somebody says, I'm full-time, got a full-time job, I need a health insurance plan. Boom. You plug it in. Some health insurance company around the country has sold 2 plans. They got to give a 3rd one. They got to give the 3rd one. And that allows anybody who has a full-time job in America to get health care coverage. Now, what do you do when you can't find it? Well, that's where the internet helps. That's where it's about two out of 3 got health insurance. We got to help the other 3rd. Yes, the premiums may go up some, but you get the government completely out of it. Let the free market work, and you provide health care plans with high deductibles, and the Doc Bucks will help those who have the high deductibles. And then you will see that America will be covered under a simple plan, 1, 2, 3, Doc Holliday simple postcard size plan to replace the Unaffordable Uncaring Act. It cannot be much simpler than that. Figure it out. It'll work, and it will save America's hide when it comes to the debt that's blowing out, and also it'll help give people insurance and hope around America, and people will be covered. And if you say, well, I can't find a job I want, and I need health insurance, well, you can work for a fast food industry full-time and get your health coverage until you can get a better job. But you got to work. And that will make America stronger, help the work participation numbers go up, and taxes will go down because we got more people working, money coming in, we pay off the debt, balance the budget, all these things. It works. It'll work. It's a simple plan. Doc Holliday's postcard health care plan. It'll work. Okay. I told you we're going to talk about presidential politics. Last week, Rick Perry jumped in. We got a bunch of folks there. Let me just play a song. If you can see all the presidential candidates and Republican nomination lining up on stage, what song would they sing? This is what I think they would sing.
Tell me something good.
Oh, baby, 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 yeah. Tell me that you like it, yeah.
Tell me something good.
Oh, tell me, baby, tell me that you love me, yeah, 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 yeah.
Tell me something good.
That's what all the presidential candidates would be saying. Tell me something good. Tell me that you like me. Tell me that you love me. Tell me that you love my ideals for America. That's what all these candidates are saying, and that's the song I think they'd be singing. I'm going to play a clip from Scott Walker, who's talking about some of the president was criticizing his foreign policy experience and ideas. So he had something to tell the president before we play that clip. Let me just remind you that Texas Governor Rick Perry jumped in last week into this presidential race. And so does that mean they do the Texas two-step? Because we got 2 from Texas, Ted Cruz and now Rick Perry. We got the Florida two-step. We got Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio. And used to, once one candidate announced from a state, usually you have to build a base and money and people you know in your home state. And now we got 2 presidential candidates come from 2 different 2 states that have 2 separate presidential candidates. Interesting. What does it mean? Just keep your eyes on it. But I do want to play this clip from Scott Walker. because we'll take a listen.
From the president.
Perhaps Mr. Walker, after he's taken some time to bone up on foreign policy, will feel the same way.
President Obama said you were needed to bone up on foreign policy, and I guess you've been doing it. I mean, you've been traveling, you've been talking to foreign policy experts.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting for the president to say that the guy who called ISIS the JV squad in Yemen a success story, somehow suggesting someone else should bone up in foreign policy, but we have. You know, we've been... Then I talked to David Cameron in the UK. We've been elsewhere. My belief is if I'm even thinking about running for president of the United States, it's not about preparing for debates. It's about being prepared to be the president of the United States.
Okay, you've been very critical of how the president's handled ISIS. Some are out there like Lindsey Graham saying we should send 10,000 U.S. ground troops right now to Iraq to help with this fight. Do you favor that?
No, I think we shouldn't rule anything out. I think that's a big mistake this president's made here and elsewhere about saying how long we would go or how much we would invest.
I'm not talking about ruling it out. I'm saying, would you do that?
No, I'm not arguing that's the first approach. I'd tell you three specific things I think we should do in Iraq. First, we should re-engage the strength of the American forces that are there. Once you do that, you empower our allied, the allied forces that are there on behalf of Iraq to reclaim the territory that ISIS has taken. And third, you just need to make sure you do it in a way that doesn't provide safe haven into places like Syria as you push them out.
So you would not send combat troops now to Iraq?
No, I don't. I believe right now we have a capacity to reclaim Iraq with the Iraqi forces are there as long as we unleash the power that's already there of the American armed forces.
And you say you wouldn't rule out anything, though. Does that include, I mean, would you rule out a full-blown U.S. reinvasion of Iraq and Syria?
I don't think we should ever send a message to our foes as to how far we're willing to go.
So you wouldn't rule out a full-blown reinvasion?
I would not rule out boots on the ground. I think...
No, but I'm asking, would you rule out a full-blown reinvasion of Iraq?
If the national interests of this country are at stake here at risk in this country or abroad, that's, to me, the standard of what we do for military engagement.
Meanwhile...
There's Governor Scott Walker of Wisconsin and showing a complete control of a crazy question and a... When President Obama said he needed to bone up on foreign policy, and he said, this is coming from the person who called ISIS the JV team, and he said Yemen was his success story. Mr. President, you have no ability to tell someone to bone up on foreign policy. There's been some boneheaded decisions coming out of the White House, and... We don't need somebody to tell the Republicans how to get together on foreign policy. But I think Scott Walker, as he followed through with the question, showed that he has a command of what needs to be done in America. I think it shows common sense. I think it shows he's willing to reach out and listen. And I'll tell you this, Scott Walker, without any foreign policy experience right now, could run circles around this administration. And I'm glad he's getting in a race. We're going to be talking more about presidential politics each week. We're glad you're listening to Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. Stay with us. It's an exciting time to be an American looking at 2016. And there's a lot of hurdles this country has got to jump. And we're going to help you understand why we need to work hard as Americans. If you love freedom and love liberty, this is a time not to give up, not to be discouraged, not to disengage. You know, I told you I took a lot out of me running for Congress, but I'm not going to disengage because I love my children. I love my country. I love my listeners. Be here next week. Talk to you then.
Thanks for joining us today. And remember to listen again next week for another edition of Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. You can order Ed's new book, Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics, Tea Party versus the Status Quo, by clicking on the book cover right in front of you on the screen. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week.